This famous story, Luke tells it so very, very differently from Mark. Mark has it that Jesus just picks these two commandments from among hundreds, calls them the greatest two, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor like him. And the lawyer rejoins, "You are right. You are so right," he says. Mark doesn't have any story following that. Luke turns it around, though. The lawyer wants to learn something about life, real life. And rather than just tell him an answer, Jesus says, "Well, tell me what you read in the law. How do you understand it?" The lawyer names the two great loves of God and neighbor. These are drawn, incidentally, from Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus 19, if you want to find their sources. And Jesus is the one who says, "You are right. You're so right. Do this and live." But Luke's lawyer is not happy. He wants to justify himself, the story says, defend himself. Well, we get it. We get to see it every single week. In the news, some public figure is being questioned about some questionable doings, and he never, never, never says, "You're right, I screwed up." He always says, "I am not. I did not. It's complicated." Well, our lawyer says he wants to know the way to eternal life. So, why not accept Jesus' answer and leave, rejoicing with reverence for the teaching and the teacher? Instead, he's defensive. "Who is my neighbor?" As if Jesus couldn't find an answer to that one. What's troubling this man? Why doesn't Jesus have counsel that comforts him? What's with him? I'm sure you've seen this or been this, where not an earthly thing is missing from a life. Enough money, a good home, decent work, okay health, a caring partner, even maybe a church home. But the soul craves more and more and is not happy. When one of us is in that state, we are vulnerable to abuse ourselves with one potion or another. They don't need to be taken internally to be addictive potions. There's a hunger loose in us. It is endless. And that is why nothing can fill it. That is why we can stuff in so much of whatever poison we choose, television, shopping, drink, you name it. Now, Jesus has offered the lawyer wisdom. "Do this and you will live." But the lawyer turns it aside. He's performed these duties. He's gone to church. He has prayed. He has ladled soup in the soup kitchen. Donated to charities, but his appetite for a happiness unknown grips his mind like a wolf's jaw. You may have observed something like it in a marriage that's in trouble. One partner is tumbling out of the relationship like a hiker falling off a path, losing his footing all the time. And the therapist suggests things to do to get your footing again. "Do this and you will live together." But the counsel only makes the disheartened one more fearful and depressed. The tumbling wanderer tumbles further, for he cannot feel his way into these practices, and so he will not perform them. That fake it till you make it, or faith it till you make it, not for him. To perform them in the manner of a student following his master would require a shift of control, frankly. If for only 7 seconds at a time he would be not listening to this anguishing hunger for a happiness he has not yet known. For only 7 seconds, the dream of happiness which preserves that anxiety would not be there. And he might come to himself, but he would be a different self to come to. He resists this. He must be in control. The dream he will not relinquish. This is where our lawyer is. He's stuck. He's stuck between a desire for more satisfaction than he has known in his whole life and duties over here for which he has no feeling. He sees no way forward. He wants to save his life, but he is not willing to lose it. He must have it on his own terms. He is what our tradition has called a man of a doubled mind, a troubled mind. So Jesus tells him our famous parable of two men for whom the performance of duty has squeezed out all their compassion, and of one man who is a stranger in that land and therefore has no duties in that land, no prestige, no advantage, no future really in that land. And yet, in him, mercy rules. He is the neighbor, Jesus affirms. He is the neighbor. She is my neighbor, Jesus affirms, whom I shall love as myself. This is a turn of where your ear was leaning. The neighbor is the one who is loving. The one in me from whom reckoning and positioning and social duty have dropped away like scales from the eyes. The one in me who, like the prayer of St. Teresa found in your bulletin, the one who has renounced every selfish attachment and draws abiding joy and strength from the one within, who lives not to herself, but likes to serve the Lord of love in all. She is your neighbor, that one. Your Nachbar, if you know German, neighbor comes from the word meaning living near. Your neighbor who lives near you is your true self, the one whom you shall love as your own true self. Did you hear the story that way? Or did you hear it in the same old way? That the Good Samaritan is one of those dutiful, kind people who performs all compassionate service to the needy whenever he sees them. And that outsiders are better at seeing those unjustly battered than others. Perhaps you heard it that way, the ordinary way. That isn't the way Jesus actually sums the point. He says, which of the three was the neighbor? Now, as if expecting you to take a tumble down that slope into ordinary duty and guilty self-critique, Luke suddenly rolls another ball at you to keep you dancing. He tells the story of Martha and Mary. Now, if you have gone to church often, you have often heard these two stories, but you have probably never heard them read together. Why, today in the so-called common lectionary, the Good Samaritan story is offered, and the reading that is proposed stops right there where Jesus says, go and do likewise to the neighbor, to the lawyer. The two stories are pulled apart, but Luke wasn't interested in writing short stories for short sermons. This won't be too long, don't worry. But that wasn't his point. He was writing for life's sake. These two stories are together in order to get an idea working in you, a hope working in you. He wrote for life, and he has not forgotten the question that is at the top, the head of the story, which is about the heart, which is, how am I to love the Lord my God with all my heart and soul and strength, and love my neighbor as myself? These two are really, really one. Now, by that, I do not mean they're interchangeable. I do not mean that if you are loving your neighbor, then that's just as good as loving God, so don't sweat the God stuff. I don't mean that. And I don't mean the reverse either, which is if you are devoted to God and worship freely and trust in God's promises, don't sweat the social justice stuff. I don't mean that. Luke doesn't mean that. Jesus didn't mean that. All the law and the prophets did not mean that. They mean these two are one. Call it abinity, if you like. Where love of God is missing, duty and service of every kind are empty. When desire to know your true self falls away, yes, that one true self whom Teresa refers to, neither God nor other has any dimension. And when the need of the other touches you not, then God and self are more like puppets in a closet. Has some breakdown of this kind come in your life? Of course it has. Of course it has come into our lives that we do not get the God, self, other flow moving smoothly, powerfully in our lives. Of course it has. That is why Luke reworked Mark's story from simply the occasion of the two great commandments to help us to have ears to hear, to help us come free of our guilt about not doing enough, about duties with no feeling, to come, as we said many moons ago here, to attend not so much to the duty of our presence as to the beauty of our presence before the Lord. Martha, 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 says Jesus. You are worried and distracted by many, many things, but there is need of one thing only. Mary has chosen the better part. Mary, sitting, listening to one thing only at her master's feet. She has put her feet on the path of life, the one the lawyer's wondering about. Don't lose this key. When you have come apart, when God in you have come apart, when that weeping world out there is tearing you apart, return to the one thing only. Come home, do soul service before social service. There is an order of supply here. It's not that social service is less important than soul service. It's simply a hierarchy of heaven and earth. Soul service is critical in order that you know whom to serve and what to give. It is the reason in Sabbath rest. It is the reason we come again here. And if we have heard our Lord, do not work this day. It is the center point in prayer and in meditation. It is the test of truth in every action that is just, that you acknowledge yourself a creature who cannot account for his store of energy, who cannot account for her treasury of gifts. Emerson wrote, "We are a stream whose source is hidden. Our being is descending into us from we know not whence." So stop. Like Mary, stop. stop from the kitchen duties, stop from the works of mercy and advocacy and that clarion call for justice, not because they're wrong, but because soul service must come before social service. Stop and fall silent and listen. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. Now, some part of you might say, I've done that, but it didn't renew my feeling. I'm still hungry. If you have a voice like that in you, it's just a little diagnosis, not of your true self or of your relation with your God. A diagnosis of your practices, they're not working. You need to find others. You need to be experimental. The things you did were not deep enough. They were not still enough. They did not stop you enough to get you wholly alone with the one thing only who comes to you as to Mary, who has chosen the better part. Jesus says, it cannot be taken from you, but you can lose it. Don't lose this key. Nourish your soul. Nourish your soul, else you cannot offer to others what they need. You cannot discern what others need. Stop before you go. How do you stop to be with your master? There is not one answer. But let us listen in very briefly to Mary's seminar. How did Mary stop? Of course, we don't know what was said. But we can say this. Jesus cannot have been talking all the time. People do not learn well from much talking. We say Jesus was a great teacher. Well, the proof of great teaching is great learning of what the teacher intended. What did the teacher intend? One thing only. That you learn what it is to not save your life, but to lose it, to stop, that you may be given life, not of your own making. Now it is full summer. Stop before your God in as many different ways as you can divine this summer. Stop before you go.